Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is 14 minutes actually, past the hour of 9 o'clock. I don't want you to think that you're late and you have a minute left. Good morning and welcome. Very nice to have you here. We'll get into a lot of good stuff, a lot of subjects that happened over the weekend. We will also introduce you to our panel and invite you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. O-R-G. Let me introduce the group to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, brother. My issue comes down to a word in this wonderful world we all live in. Snow.
Yeah. Nice, huh?
And then this week, and later it's supposed to be like 85 this week, right? Something like that.
This ain't right.
I don't know. Did it rain here all day yesterday? Is that where?
Yeah, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was down in the city yesterday, and it was beautiful. Just with the flowers were out, and it was a gorgeous spring day.
What city?
New York City.
Oh, you said the city.
The city. Well, the city.
Could have been Buffalo or Rochester.
It was never. I don't know. It wasn't Buffalo. It wasn't Rhode Island. It wasn't Providence. It wasn't Pawtucket. It was New York City. I went down to see the big Harry Potter extravaganza.
Oh, how was that?
Oh, my God.
Was it good?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's stunning. Absolutely amazing.
How do you get these tickets? Every time Roselle or I tries to find some tickets to a Broadway show, forget it.
No, it has nothing to do with knowing people. You have to go through the... For that one, you had to become a verified ticket buyer. And then once you're verified... Then you go through a whole screening process, and then once you're verified, then you have to win a lottery to spend $1 million on the tickets. So you see, it's not everybody can just spend the money on the tickets.
Okay, Big Joe, how much is
a
ticket?
It's I think it's two. Well, see, there's two parts to it, so it's $268 a part per person.
Wait a second. Are you telling us it's $600 a person?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm also telling you that it's worth it.
I'll wait for it to come to Proctor's.
Now, with that said, there are tickets for $40 tickets on Fridays that they have. There are obviously we were downstairs, but if you could go upstairs, then those tickets are cheaper. There are other seating arrangements, but it's an expensive show.
I'm always interested in the negotiations with the wife because I can't even see her having.
This was the wife.
Well, I'm just saying. I couldn't. If I said to my wife, "Honey, I would like
the sister,
purchase
the dog,
a
you know,
ticket.
You know, the sister, the dog, know, the wife." But, okay.
Come on, Libby.
She wouldn't even entertain the conversation.
Now, I will say that this was. I went with my niece, and it was a present for her getting her new job.
Oh, was anybody was Kelly there too?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it was $1,200.
Yes, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
But it was lovely. We had a lovely, lovely time.
Dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd you eat?
Brazen Tavern. Have you ever eaten there? It's over at night. It's the Hell's Kitchen over at Ninth Avenue. Very nice.
No. And then plus. Did you drive time?
David Soares is here. He's the Albany County District Attorney. He is with us on Monday, and we're thrilled to have you here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to help me on this.
Oh, okay? I'm
we can switch to discussion of prom weekend.
Joe, I thought you were the prosecutor.
Joe, it's a lost cause.
Good morning. Very nice to have you here. Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant. She joins us. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
And Libby Post, our political consultant. Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
Very nice to have you all with us. All right. Let me go over and talk about what's happening here today. And that is, there's a lot of stories, a lot happening, and we'll get to them. I'm also interested in, because we were just talking about this right before we went on the air, about one of the big stories was about the correspondence dinner. And but I'm going to hold that one for a little while because there is obviously other things to talk about. We'll go with North Korea first, then we'll go to China, and then we'll talk about the correspondence dinner. So North Korea is there was some breakthrough this weekend with Kim Jong-un saying
that he would abandon his nuclear weapons if the United States agreed to formally end the Korean War and promised not to invade his country. In a confidence-building gesture ahead of a proposed summit meeting with President Trump, a suddenly loquacious and conciliatory Mr. Kim also said he would invite experts and journalists from South Korea and the United States to watch the shutdown next month of his country's only known underground nuclear site. In Washington, Trump officials spoke cautiously about the chances of reaching a deal and laid out a plan for the dismantling of the North's nuclear program, perhaps over a two-year period. It was said by the president just, I think, less than a week ago that there was a good chance that this meeting would never even take place. So where are we right now?
I think they're taking a victory lap, and President of the United States is already one quarter of the way around the track,
yeah.
You know, if you're listening to any of the remarks right. that occurred over the weekend. But I think, as the experts have all commented during this, all the variety of shows and the periodicals that I've consumed over the weekend, I mean, it's cautious optimism, because this is something that this family has continued to perpetrate, it seems, with every administration. The promise of denuclearization, the promise of adopting more democratic values, and then they do nothing, because as soon as they make the promise, they're right back in their underground bunkers developing and advancing, you know, their nuclear endeavors.
And, you know, on one... You had mixed messages coming from the administration, because Pompeo was saying one thing, Bolton was saying another. Then you've got people like Trump himself saying he should get the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, it's a very much wait and see, because we can't necessarily trust any of this, any of the players here, regardless.
Not only can you not trust it, but as you said about the inconsistent messaging coming from the administration, why would the word Libya ever come out of your mouth if you're trying to convince a nation to not pursue its nuclear capabilities? I mean, people often use Libya as an example of why nations who are in negotiations with the United States shouldn't, abandon their pursuits. And Bolton is leading off with Libya. It's just absurd.
Well, these are the people.
Well, you know, I don't want to be Mr. Unpopularity here. For a change, but it does seem to me that because of his bellicosity, it may turn out that Trump makes out like a bandit here. He may, in fact, have scared them to the point where they're going to give in, and they're going to say, okay, you can have this win, which is going to help him, makes me ill in the stomach, which is going to help him with what he is doing in terms of his braggadocio, as you saw at his rally the other night when he was avoiding the correspondents' dinner. They were yelling from the group, and I'm sure it didn't come out of nowhere. No bell, no bell, no bell. I think the fact that some of us are so disgusted with Trump for so many reasons, we still have to understand in a political scientific way what's going on here and what the benefits to Trump may be.
You know, I have a lot of reason to doubt the veracity of North Korea's their stated intentions and of course the basis for them wanting to engage in this conversation. I mean, we're on the eve of the TPP becoming, you know, formalized, and that region of the world becoming one of the most, prosperous, trading centers of
yes.
On planet Earth. And so,
yes.
if you're North Korea, do you want to continue to be isolated when all of that prosperity is happening around, and your neighbors are benefiting from it? And let's be very clear here. I don't think that North Korea does anything without the full support and endorsement from China.
Or orders from China.
Or mm-hmm. orders from China.
And, you know, as you're speaking about TPP, David Soares, I have to say, I think that the giant in the place is China, and they are doing extremely well, and they don't want they don't want the North Koreans screwing up their economic development and what they have.
I don't think the meeting between the two halves would have happened.
No,
without
I couldn't agree more.
A tacit, you know, a pat on the head saying yes, go and do it.
Are we all in agreement that we think that there is actually going to be the close down of the sites?
I'm sorry, Joe, I couldn't hear you.
I mean, of what they're saying is that they're going to be closing down the facilities and they're going to bring in the press and all that.
Well, the experts say that the facility that they were going to close is not germane to the overall program, and that they have other facilities as well. And so this will just be a show, an important show, but a show.
What do you mean, Teresa?
But I think that, pardon? I think the new news out this morning is that Trump is proposing that the meeting be at the DMZ, and actually I thought that was going to be where it was all along. You know, they talked about a lot of other places, but particularly given all the pomp and circumstance and historic attention given to when the leaders of North and South Korea met there. So it's not surprising that he's tweeting now that that's where he wants it. But, you know, I think that the good news is that instead of hurling insults at each other, that the temperature has been lowered and they're having these discussions. But I think that Bolton, who, you know, as the Times and others say, longtime critic of the diplomacy with North Korea, he's injecting a fairly high dose of reality about North Korea's propensity to follow through over time with what they're discussing. But we have to be happy that they are, everybody seems to put their weapons away for a while now and are talking. That's the good news here.
I think the people that you know should be the happiest and should, you know, be the people that are the most aggressive in their pursuits for this peace is South Korea. But I also think that if you take a step back and you think about what this administration, you know, if you just follow the administration's rhetoric for the last several months, they haven't done themselves any favors. I mean, the discussion about taxing steel and aluminum would have impacted, you know, South Korea, our allies. I mean, all of this conversations about tariffs and tariff wars would have had one of the more detrimental impacts on the South Korean economy. And so if you have a president that's so bellicose and is out there talking about trade wars, and meantime, you know, China is basically walking in with soft power all over the world and befriending the nations that we are insulting, I think if you're South Korea, you're starting to think differently about your relationship with the United States. If you're North Korea and you're seeing this prosperity take place around your neighborhood, I think you're starting to think a little bit different about, you know, your posture. And I don't think this is the United States at all behind bringing these two, you know, nations together. I think it's more of China bringing these two nations together, because China under no circumstances would ever accept an American power right on its border.
Right. I mean, I absolutely agree that the lead in this is China. If a Nobel is going to go somewhere, it's maybe with, I think, President Moon Jae-in from South Korea.
Absolutely.
He has absolutely threaded this very difficult needle. I think the situation with North Korea, they've got to be thinking of three things. You know, one is they have the nuclear weapon. Number two is that their people are starving and they need to deal with that. And if China, you know, China puts too much pressure on them, you know, they need food and resources from China. And number three is, frankly, you have a president of the United States who they know is weak and or weaker than probably at any time in a long time. So it's a good time to negotiate. But I think that the power dynamic here is really between China and South Korea. And North Korea, that's the power dynamic here. And exactly what you just said, David, there's now daylight between the U.S. and South Korea, and that's, I think the experts say that that's a problem.
And you know what's interesting is I did read or hear that the president of South Korea is intent on giving Trump the credit for having negotiated his good ability to negotiate this stuff. Talk about threading the needle, and Teresa, you're exactly right. And that's fascinating. My bet is if the Nobel Peace people get together, you better believe that the president of South Korea is going to get the prize.
I don't think you can actually be considered for the Nobel Peace Prize because there's a perception created that you're bringing peace to the Korean conflict, while at the same time you're considering destroying the agreement with Iran about nuclear weapons, and you are possibly going to be creating this kind of eruption in another part of the world. That's absurd.
Yeah, but his Trump's take on the Peace Prize is, well, Obama got it right away. Why shouldn't I?
Yeah,
I'm sure that's what's going through his mind. The other part that's interesting here is the economics of this. You're now Asia. If North Korea and South Korea, they're not going to come together, but if North Korea opens up its borders, they recognize they have to be a little more capitalistic like China is. You can now have a change in the economic balance where it's going to be much more focused on that part of the world because you've got Japan, you've got North Korea, South Korea, you've got China.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have letters, and we'll talk about other subjects as well. We welcome your input, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We have Alan Chartok, David Soares, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post all joining us. And you can join us, too. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this glorious rainy Monday morning. Hi. We're going to go to some letters. We have letters from people, and we'll go to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics as well.
Good. Here comes the other side from Mark. Get over it. When are you going to stop your fear-mongering rhetoric? Admit it, the U.S. and many parts of the world are heading to a safer place based on the administration policies. Tough talk works. We saw it with Reagan and now with Trump. And by the way, just met with my tax advisor. He advised me that based on modeling of my account for next year, my taxes will go down and be simpler, saving me even more money. The tax cuts are not just for the rich. Please put some facts behind your reporting, Mark.
Wow, Mark.
There's a letter.
There's the unicorn.
Right.
Could I just mention...
I wish that were true.
Yeah. Could I just mention World War One, World War II?
Right. The Korean War.
Yeah, certain amount of...
What worries me, I'd love to hear the experts' take on this, is it seems that everywhere he goes, there's more arms sales. Arms sales to the Saudis, arms sales to Poland, arms sales to... Really pushing arms sales to... Japan, it seems to, and so what are the implications of all of that, whereas opposed to China, it's going around the world, they're building schools, they're building hospitals, they're building computers, high-performance computing, and, they're taking land and rare earth minerals, but they're not leaving weapons behind, they're leaving schools and other things. So what's the long-term implications of those two different strategies?
Well, I'd like to know the long-term implications of what appears to be many parts of our globe that seems to be taking a much more aggressive isolationist stance where countries are abandoning democratic values and instead voting in strongmen. And Mark, while I'm very happy for you and your tax return and your observations, but the isolationist policies that we've adopted in this country are going to come back and bite us in spades.
And David, your point about the taxes is so relevant because it's probably true that the Chartoks will save a dollar or two. It is also probably true that Mark saves some money. But the guys who really save the money
are
people
sitting
at the top, and that's what this whole thing is
about. And they're
the
gun dealers. They're the gun manufacturers. They're the ones who are selling those weapons of war all across the globe.
But also,
that's the connection here.
Now,
the next generation and the generation after that are also paying for it because this tax break for the wealthiest is, the price tag is being paid by the next generation and. As the debt and deficit rises. I know they're two separate
things,
but they're both going up.
Coca-Cola costs how much now?
Yeah.
Oh. Also, the price of gas. There was an interesting calculation that the price of gas has risen dramatically, and for many, that's wiped out the savings that they would get.
And you don't hear any of the Republicans complaining about gas going up like they did when Obama was president.
But I do, you know, I would, I hope, you know, Mark's right. I hope I'm wrong and that he's right. I hope it all works out for the best and that the working class, you know, get the benefits of a tax break. That would be great. The economists don't say that's what's going to happen, but...
And it's a question of how much.
It would be good if it did, right? Yeah. We'd be happy about
now,
that.
Now, Teresa, you said something else a couple seconds ago that I found very interesting. And that had to do with the Chinese building schools and doing the rest of the stuff. The Chinese, of course, I know you know this, are building huge weapons systems for themselves and exporting weapons to other countries.
But what they're doing, for instance, when they're going into various countries in Africa to lock up the rare earth metals they need for the future right. economy, they are going in and they're building high-performance computing centers. They're supporting colleges. They're building roads. They're building bridges. They're building infrastructure.
It's true.
And at the same time, you know, there's... At the same time, the U.S. is pulling back diplomatically all around the world, and we're cutting back on investments around the world. Countries like China are doing just the opposite.
It's amazing to see the United States pulling back on our use of soft power and diplomacy and allowing for vacuums to exist all over the world and for China to just rush in there. And begin to fill up that space. I'm even shocked at the rhetoric that I hear in the United Nations that we are now, you know, holding hostage aid, depending on who's critical of the United States, and we're seeing this happen through, you know, Nikki Haley. So I don't know what Mark is experiencing and what he's seeing, but I'm very cautious about you know.
Well, it was a good letter, and I'm glad he sent it. Just back to you for a second there, Teresa. You know, you make a good point, but my point is not that they're not doing what you say they're doing. It is that they're doing other things also. They are also arming themselves to the teeth. We know that. Their space program moves forward with all the implications for that. Their own armaments certainly aren't suffering. So that's all I meant to say. It wasn't that you were wrong. They're playing their cards brilliantly. They are.
They're having a different approach than this administration does to their moves and efforts to expand their power around the world.
I also think that China has done a brilliant job of changing the perceptions of who they are.
That's right.
I mean, as a young person growing up, you would never hear any news about China that also didn't talk about its human rights violations, and now you almost never hear about China and their human rights
violations. Well, you don't hear it because this administration doesn't care.
Yeah. Okay?
And it doesn't look so good itself.
Right, right. this administration has a bad record, and it doesn't care. They've rebranded themselves as a global power, and they're doing a good job of it. And they're being the benevolent dictator and helping people while they take their rare earth minerals, but they're actually... If they're doing the schools, they're helping people. But you know what? You know, is it Mark who wrote the letter?
Yeah, Mark.
You know, I get $40 or $50 more in my paycheck every week, but I'd rather that money go to help people rather than being in my pocket. I could live on what I got before, but the people who are going to make out like bandits with this tax deal is not you and me. You know, yeah, we may make a little bit more, $600, $700 more. It's going to be... It's the oligarchs of this country who are making out like bandits here, and the big corporations, and so you know we have to
I think, Sprint and T-Mobile.
Yeah, right. But I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that you know where this administration has been very effective in making everybody feel so individualistic, and it's all about me because this president says it's all about him, that we don't think of anybody else.
You know,
anymore.
It's a brilliant analysis, of course. You're right. However, I do want to remember that I can just imagine them sitting around the tax-cutting table and having a discussion saying, now how little can we give these people let them think that they're getting ahead
of the
way?
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
But let's fire the Catholic priest who may say a prayer.
They fired the Jesuit. Oh, my goodness.
Talk about a stupid move.
You want to hear something even stupider? The head chaplains in a on a base, I think in Tennessee, fired the Jewish chaplains because they didn't want to be able, they didn't think they needed to provide Shabbat services for the Jewish families of enlisted men who were down at that base.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the headline right now in the New York Times is China prepares a hardline stance on U.S. trade demands. And then the one below that, U.S. allies brace for trade wars, talks on Trump tariff stall. I think that you can't ignore that in the context of the North-South Korea talks.
Mm.
The economic issues are completely intertwined with the military issues in those two, and these are going to be really tough needles to thread.
Mm. All right, two letters.
Okay, here we go. Hi, panel.
Hi.
Can't trust North Korea, can't trust Trump. Another attack on women, in this case, Ms. Wolf. That's what happens when a female comedian roasts a misogynist and his playmates. If Miss Wolf were a Mr. Wolf, the reaction would have been right on. But a female roasting the swamp slugs in the White House, the cabinet, and the Republican Party causes the white male population to do what they usually do. Tell her she stepped out of her place in their world. Now, we're going to get to that later.
We'll get to the Correspondents' Dinner. We'll talk about that and Michelle Wolf and some of the uproar over that, which... Yeah, okay.
And a regular correspondent, always appreciated, Christine, says, North Korea denuclearization. Hi, panel. I share Alan's sick-to-my-stomach remark, 45, spouting about North Korean deal. I am betting Kim will start screaming, he should get the Nobel Peace Prize. Christine.
Let's take a break there. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is a delight because we have Alan and David Soares and Teresa Bourgeois and Libby Post all here under one roof to talk about, well, they're here because of the roof because it's raining outside.
And the building is still standing.
That's right. The building is still standing. We're very happy about that as well. We have letters. We have more letters. We're going to go through those and we'll get going.
We have a ton, Joe. Good morning, panel. Since he was elected, President Moon of South Korea has taken the softest stance of any South Korean president in history on the North and expressed willingness to help with the North's economy. Given Kim's growing confidence in his nuclear accomplishments and the pain inflicted by the boycotts, the time was right, with or without Trump's ranting and bellicosity, Scott. But I still think the fact that the South Korean president gives Trump credit for having initiated this shows just what a brilliant man he is, both in his negotiation with the North and with the Chinese.
I was just going to say that. I mean, the fact that he understands that he is dealing with a child in the president of the United States, mm-hmm. and therefore must stroke
two children.
Two children. And he's the adult in the room. Mm-hmm. It just restores confidence in the fact that if I were a citizen of South Korea, I would really be proud of what my president is doing. Yep.
I thought his gesture around the Olympics was a very important one because symbolism is so important everywhere, but particularly there. And it created a space for them to have talks that they might not otherwise have been able to have. I thought it was brilliant, and that didn't come at the last minute. You know that they had thought that through.
Well, as you said before, the inextricable nature of the economy playing a role in all of this. I think Korea's economy, with its growth and its prosperity and its future looking very bright, I don't know that they're necessarily have to be so dependent on what the Americans think before they go and they do what they do. So I think they've gotten a little more independence as well.
But David, we saw something like this happen in Germany, where the West had it all and the East had, it was really in the dumps. And it led to that. But what I'm thinking is, if I am the North Korean dictator, what am I thinking I am risking here by following that model of reunification or of anything like it? Does that mean I'm a dead man?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that we don't have any intelligence on what goes on in North Korea. And I mean, for this man to be as conciliatory as he's been over the course of the last several weeks, given all of the rhetoric and the flame-throwing and the missile launching that he's done, there's got to be something going on in his own country with his people in terms of the sanctions that have been enforced and held that's caused, you know, this sort of turnaround.
Everybody's starving is what we keep hearing.
Yes, and it's all
China. People are starving.
And it's all China. I mean, I think China's laying it out the order and saying this is what has to happen here.
But what do you mean it's all China? Because
they're doing this. They're behind it all.
I think China is pulling the strings here. Mm-hmm.
Not causing the people to starve.
Not causing the people to starve.
Okay, I just, when you said all China, what is it that you were talking
about?
Yeah, because the experts say that Chinese, they don't want reunification, but they also don't want the situation in North Korea to degrade so badly. You know that they want to keep a balance.
If you're China, don't you want to really strengthen your relationship with South Korea? You know, I would think that if you're able to pull South Korea from the influences of the United States, because and make that part of the continent a much more Chinese-centric, you know, in terms of its economy as well as culture, that's a huge win for China long term.
Yeah. Hans writes, it is South Korea, not North Korea, that President Trump has scared to the negotiation table. Well, you're entitled to your opinion. I don't think that's the case. Rock in Needham says, good morning, Alan. Remember when Henry Kissinger and Le Duc Tho won the Nobel Prize for ending the Vietnam War? Then after the U.S. left, the North Vietnamese violated the agreement and took over the whole country. Le actually refused the prize. Maybe he knew what was going to happen afterward. Perhaps they can recycle his prize and give it to Trump.
Today is the anniversary of the fall of Saigon, just by the way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just going back to what Hans had mentioned, and I mean, I think he wrote one sentence, and there's a lot to pull from that, but you know, him talking about how Trump might have influenced South Korea to the table. If you're living in South Korea and you hear the American president talk about the size of his nuclear buttons, you know, you're actually the person and you're the people who have the most to be concerned about the fiery rhetoric. I think you've always been accustomed to hearing the North espouse those kind of, that kind of rhetoric, but you've never heard it from the United States. So if President Moon, you know, was inspired to, you know, sort of engage in peace talks because of the rhetoric from Donald Trump, then I would have to say there's some truth to that.
One of the things, and I was reading the English South Korean press, that the concern is that Trump negotiates a deal that deals with long-range missiles, but doesn't address the short range, and which is, you know, their concern.
Self-serving.
Right. All right, let's go to other letters.
Okay, thank you, Joe. John in Newburgh says, dear panel, it has become apparent, at least to me, that Trump's negotiating techniques entails a pendular swing. He feels you out through emotional response to his initially extreme, parenthesis, knee, irrational proposal, and ascertains where you are willing to compromise. This is true whether he is negotiating an international treaty or appointing cabinet members. Walking away from the table is something he has yet to deal with as president. Regards, John and Newberg.
All right.
John, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think of what this president has negotiated with any degree of success, and I can't think of a thing. I can't think of a thing that this president has successfully negotiated.
He would say the tax cut.
Yeah.
The Electoral College.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. And we've heard from Max, who is a skeptic in Ankrum. I suspect that although North Korea may be the first, many countries not considered friends of the U.S. will do things to make Trump look good, especially prior to the 2020 elections. What better way to keep him in office than this, thus ensure our country's continued destruction? That's from Max, who is a skeptic in Ankrum. I like that. And Tracy says, North Korea, so much worry and angst that this negotiation with Korea will be successful. So scared President Trump will get any credit. Get over it and hope that this will work. People's lives are at stake. And that's from Tracy. Thank you, Tracy. And Richard, anybody?
Did Tracy write to the station when this man was talking about the size of his nuclear buttons and, you know, the fire and anything that fire and fury? Did she write? Because we should probably try to pull that one.
Well, if Tracy, if Tracy's on the other side of the microphone right now and thinking about what you just said, David, she would probably be saying, yeah, that's what worked. It worked.
Oh, okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's what she would say.
You put it in the Nobel Prize speech.
Teresa, you were going to say?
You know, it will be great if 10, 20 years from now, you know, we see that this has worked. That would be great. That would be great to have, you know, that would be a great outcome. It's just the experts, I'm not one of them, just are very cautious about this.
Richard says, Nobel Prize panel, President Trump would probably need to maintain the Iran nuclear peace deal and perhaps rejoin the Paris Climate Accord if he would like to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's from Richard.
Yeah, well, going back to the point that I was trying to make a little bit earlier, I don't think that you would be considered for the Nobel Peace Prize because you've managed to have South Korea and North Korea engage in peace discussions while at the same time you're about to tear up the Iran nuclear deal.
Okay. My prediction, by the way, David, is that the South Korean is going to get the Nobel Peace Prize.
I agree.
McKay in Athens, New York says, we've played, period. China, Russia, and both Koreas win, period. China and Russia benefit from our faltering world standing. Soon, South Korea won't need us anymore either. And that's from McKay in Athens.
All right. Is that it?
I'm afraid so, Joe.
Don't be afraid. We have plenty of show. we have other things to talk about. Don't you worry. Let us talk. I know we've been talking about China, and I would just like to go back to that because Teresa mentioned this earlier, and I think it is important about what the headline is, as she mentioned in the New York Times, about China prepares a hardline stance on U.S. trade demands. So where are we on this trade war? China will refuse to discuss President Trump's two toughest trade demands in talks with U.S. negotiators this week. And that's according to people involved in Chinese policymaking. Its position could leave Washington with a difficult choice of either escalating the dispute or backing down. Do they back down?
I don't know.
I think they have to back down. I don't see how. I don't see the end game here for the United States in this, you know, discussion with China. And I also see many of the American corporations putting pressure on this president to you know, disengage from this issue.
Well, he hasn't responded to that in the past. In other words, this is not a guy whose ego permits him to quote back down.
I'm not even clear what he's going to do yet with this, you know, with this trade war with our allies, you know, because we have these deadlines looming. They announced these tariffs and then they gave a extension, and those extensions are ending soon. And that's why we saw Macron coming and Merkel, both because of the looming deadlines on the trade issue and the looming deadline on the Iran agreement. And so how are you going to balance these trade fights with our allies versus the trade fights with China? What's the outcome here?
I don't know if what he does is engages in these just to distract from the current issues or to curry political favor with a particular section of the country, given who's running for office and what special election. But the idea of a trade war at this moment, where, you know, even if you're talking about an American car, right, the American car may be assembled here, but the motor is assembled in South Korea. The electronics is assembled in Mexico. The parts may be coming from China. Mm. You know, it's the inextricably interlocked nature of how things are produced in the world that we're living in today that makes this whole talk about trade and tariffs so absurd.
You know, on the one hand, we have this incredibly intertwined global economy, like you're saying. And on the other hand, we have these strongmen who want to isolate their countries. And it's a perfect recipe for disaster and a global economic meltdown that could be far more reaching than any of us could ever even
directly after World War II, right?
Right. I mean,
or even before World War II. Remember why the Japanese came. That was a result of our policy. I'm not saying the Japanese were justified. They certainly weren't. But it was all about rubber. It was all about the kinds of things that they felt that we wouldn't send them steel. We wouldn't send them this and that. And so they. So if you win, if you, quote, win, there are always consequences from winning also.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break. We have to go over to news. When we come back, we will have many other topics to discuss. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And very nice to have you with us. Okay. What? I thought
that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You talk about global economic crisis.
Well, Trump all right. We're looking at some other stories.
That was Saturday night.
Let's do letters, and then we'll do a bonus round. I want to get in the Correspondence Center. I want to get all the other stuff, and
we've got a lot to do.
Ronnie Jackson, and okay, let's go.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
Teachers striking all over America.
That's great.
Narcissa writes, China in Africa. Hi, panel. While I usually love what Teresa has to say, I have to strongly disagree with her analysis of China in Africa. In point of fact, China is not leaving Africa in a better place. They are exploiting Africa to the hilt, refusing to hire local Africans for anything but the most basic jobs, importing every item they need from China, so not buying locally. And in Zambia, for example, even feel free to shoot a worker. Malawi is even worse. Same in the Bahamas, same everywhere, and that's from Narcissa. Okay.
I don't know about those details. I don't disagree, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that they're exploiting these countries. What I was trying to convey is they're going in with schools and other resources. They're extracting their resources, but they're not going in with weapon sales. They're going in with schools and other things.
Okay. Judith says, tax cuts. Every tax cut means less money for the state, cities, and towns, less for the programs that help people. Taxes are the dues we pay to live in a democracy, and that's from Judith. I've always thought so, Judith. In my town, in Great Barrington, the high school is still in terrible shape because some of my favorite liberal friends came out and said, we can't afford to have these kids going to a decent school.
Taxes is what makes a civil society.
Yeah. It's what makes a civil society, but it's also the instrument that's used to weaponize and bring about cultural wars, and that's exactly what's happening right now.
Yeah. It's all according who has their finger on the adding machine. Mm-hmm.
Jamie says, doomed from the start. I have a hard time believing that the North Korea deal will not be torpedoed for the simple reason that China, Japan, and USA fears South Korea industry with North Korea labor costs. Well, you know, there are 1,000 ways to look at this stuff. There really are. And looking ahead. Jana says, please mention tax cuts are temporary in capital letters for the middle class and permanent for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And that's from Jana. That's true.
Yeah. I think we'll soon have an interesting fight over that because there's a push with the Republicans before the midterms to try to make them permanent. But the question is, how do you pay for them?
We should just get Jana to have a little conversation with our friend Mark.
Oh, yeah, Mark. Jamie says, why Korea now? North Korea can no longer control the media message from South Korea. Better to engage in a China type of society transformation than to have a cultural revolution. The slow introduction of paying jobs at the rate the government decides is the only chance it has to avoid revolution.
All right.
And John says, North Korea, dear panel, North Korea, it says, are broke, bankrupt. That's what they are negotiating. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's from John.
All right. There we go. Let's go to other stories. We'll go to the Correspondence Dinner, which happened on Saturday night. And quite an uproar over that. Sets off a furor at the annual Washington Dinner. Seems to me, though, that this always sets off some kind of furor. It's a weird event. Michelle Wolf took the stage Saturday at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What followed was a roast that took unflinching aim at some of the notables in the room.
Namely, it seems, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. But there were...
No. That's just what got... That was the 30-second spot, or, you know, the sound clip. But she went after everybody. She went after Republicans and Democrats.
No, she did. But my point is that Sarah was on the dais, yeah. And it was on the and yeah. She was going after her.
She was
specifically.
I would invite anyone to go back and look at
the whole thing,
everything. But even in previous correspondence dinner, specifically the Stephen Colbert, yeah. which was brilliant. I mean, it was just brilliant. Just like I found this particular event to be brilliant. Guess what? If you invite a clown to a child's birthday party, and that clown is supposed to make, you know, pets out of balloons, and you don't like balloons popping, you don't invite that particular clown, right?
All I know is that in the years that I've watched this event, whether it was Hasan Minhaj who did it last year, or as you mentioned, Colbert, or whoever does it, it's just a lot of very uptight people who are sitting in a room, mostly media types, who have no sense of humor or have no issue, can't take a joke themselves. They're not a great room to work off of. They barely laugh, and then I then think it's easy to turn around and say that she bombed or it didn't work, and there were people who were dismayed. I don't know. I didn't see anything here that was even a tiny bit as rough as the daily stuff done any of the evening
shows. You're absolutely right.
Shows. But I do have to say, if this wasn't an African American woman who was on that dais, would this be an issue?
The most offensive thing that happened that happens every day, as far as I'm concerned, is Sarah Huckabee Sanders having a press conference where she belittles reporters, she doesn't answer questions, and she lies. So the idea that this room full of reporters having a correspondence dinner would take offense to someone who is actually talking about Sarah, you know, Huckabee Sanders, to me is ludicrous. And I would have loved to have directed my remarks to each of those reporters that had something to say.
The other part of this is that these same people who got their knickers in such a twist about Michelle Wolf and what she said are the ones who are giving Trump a pass for every disgusting thing that comes out of his mouth. Yeah. They never hold him accountable for what he says.
Andrea Mitchell, the NBC News correspondent, tweeted that an apology is owed to the press secretary. Her network colleague, Mika Brzezinski, wrote that watching a wife and mother be humiliated on national television for her looks is deplorable.
Oh. I think it's called faux fury.
Yes.
That's.
And I think you're hearing from corporate media.
Yeah.
I think it's disgusting. I'm with you guys. I think that it was an accurate portrayal of what's going on. I think she did a great job. And by the way,
and if you don't want to be laughed at,
don't be in the room.
Well, bring a comedian in.
Well, but the other part of that, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
I'm sorry.
And by the way, from the Department of Self-Serving, I never heard of this woman before.
Me neither.
Well, she's a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, as was Hasan Minhaj, who did it last year. They're brilliant. They do work brilliant work every night, and they're very funny stand-up comedians.
Okay. My point is, I now know who she is.
But so here's my question. What did the Washington Correspondents Association expect when they asked someone like her to come and do the color commentary?
Especially when the president is not going to be in attendance.
That's right. I mean, what did they expect? Did they expect it was going to be some kind of namby-pamby, whitewash, kumbaya moment?
Teresa, you are noticeably quiet in this, and I don't know if it's because you disagree with us or because you just think we shouldn't be discussing
it. She only enjoys French comedy.
No. I think I'm a bit conflicted on this one because I think it was an accident waiting to happen, given all the things that Trump has said and done. She didn't say anything close to as offensive and personally derogatory as the things that Trump has said and done, but it was caustic. What did they expect? Steve Schmidt, the Republican operative, says anybody who stands in opposition to Trump and his degradation of our institutions, liberties, laws, and norms should pledge to refuse to do one thing that makes our toxic civic culture worse. Whataboutism and wallowing in Trump's toxic swamp of cruelty and meanness helps Trump. So I do think that it gave Trump an excuse. But separately, Dave Jolly, a former member of Congress.
One is a comedian and one is the leader of the free
exactly.
world.
Exactly. Right. He says, here's a hint. If your public persona is one of telling lies and defending a president with no professional moral integrity, then you are likely going to be roasted for telling lies and defending a president with no professional moral integrity. I think in, you know, both things can be true. These people... Kellyanne Conway. I think the stuff said about Kellyanne Conway, by the way, was worse than stuff said about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think the smoky eyes thing was not an attack on her looks.
Appearance
at all. But, you know,
no,
I think both can...
her that character from...
Oh,
from
that great
the
show.
Tale.
The Handmaid's
right.
Tale
right.
is beautiful.
That I thought was... But I think both can be true. I think it was biting because what they're doing to the country is, but I do think it handed Trump a win, which I think is unfortunate. So I'm conflicted. That's my
Well,
problem.
Also, I mean, I have to say, when she went after CNN, she said, you guys love breaking news, and you did it. You mm-hmm. broke it.
Mm-hmm. Right. She really went
line.
After the press.
And she said,
went after
good
Democrats.
Work. The most useful information on CNN now is when Anthony Bourdain tells me where to eat noodles. And then at the end, she said that the journalist said, congratulations, you have helped sell your papers and your books and your TV. You've helped create this monster, and now you're profiting from him.
And let me just...
Mika Brzezinski, by the way.
Yes.
You know.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know...
Molly Roberts, who works is an editor at the Washington Post, wrote an op-ed piece, and that
She's
said...
really good.
Yeah, that Wolf's performance was not, quote, normal for the correspondence dinner, is a testament to its timeliness and necessity. Nothing is normal right now, and pretending otherwise out of a false sense of the Fourth Estate's friendship with the executive would have been the real disgrace.
I love it.
Wolf called the Trump administration out for tearing down democracy. Then the people who are supposed to care most about holding autocrats to account called her out in turn for essentially not being chummy enough.
Now let's remember one other thing here, and that is she's a black woman.
Right.
And remember where Trump always goes.
That's right.
This is a war against blacks mm-hmm. in this country.
But I guess so
it's a war against all people of color.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, Theresa. Go right ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
No, well, the idea is that he plays to the base, it's predictable, and that's exactly
the
what
other
we're
thing.
Going
too,
I just love what the Wolf family has done to the Trump administration in the last
with Michael
six
Wolf
months.
And Michael Michelle. And Michelle. Yeah. I do have to say that Kyle Pope, the editor of the Columbia Journalism Review, last year when we were going on about this, Rosemary Arameo was before these microphones and said they ought to do away with the Correspondents' Dinner. There shouldn't be one. It's silly. It's stupid. And nobody is going to come out of it.
By the way, I agree with that not only there, but I agree with it here in Albany.
You think we should get rid of the LCA show?
Well, let me put it this way. I don't think they should be selling tickets to the people they're covering.
I see. Even if it goes to charity?
Yes.
Okay.
So Kyle Pope said... Kyle Pope said that the editor of the Columbia Journalism Review posted a message on Twitter suggesting that even journalists had enough of the annual ritual. The White House Correspondents' Dinner debacle was inevitable, destined to be either sycophantic on one extreme or mean-spirited on the other. Neither is a good look at a time when trust in media is tenuous. Can we finally all agree to put an end to this thing?
See, I don't agree with that. I mean, you know something? I happen to enjoy... The Correspondents' Dinner. I happen to enjoy seeing, you know, the most powerful, you know, person on the planet, you know, being poked fun at. I mean, the Stephen Colbert thing, in his, you know, his skewering of George Bush, to me was funny, but to see George Bush just laughing along with it and taking
Obama
it all in.
Took it all in.
The, yes.
With stride yes. every year.
But there's one more thing here. Doesn't it also, this is what bothers me about it, doesn't it normalize what's going on? We have a
right,
man
that's...
in the, right? We have a man in the presidency who is so dangerous that played the wrong way nuclear bombs will fly. People who had been making advances in the society will be set back. All of those things come up. And when you kid around about it, yeah, don't you also create, aha, it's all fun. It's like the hockey guys who beat each other over the head with their sticks.
Part of the game.
And then as they walk off, they put their arms around each other. I think there's something dangerous about that.
That's the question that I had. Could it have been done in a way, and I don't know, could it have been, can you tell jokes in a way that aren't so bullying, but that really point out how horrible this situation is, this challenge? And I don't know if you could or not.
I think you can, but it depends on the comedian. It depends on the artist. There are artists that go all in, and there are artists that don't. Trevor Noah, when he's on television on The Daily Show, and you watch his material, it's fun, it's very funny, it's very informative. And if you wanted Trevor Noah doing that, then you'd say, hey, Trevor, come on over here. We'd like your material to be like your show. If you see Trevor Noah on Netflix or on HBO or some other network where he's, you know, a little more aggressive. Well, then you could say, hey, we want this version of your material as opposed to that version. Well, I don't know that that was done here, but, the problem with all of this is that you've had every president who've experienced this, who show up, they understand what's going to happen.
That's right.
Right? It humanizes them. It demonstrates that they have a very good sense of humor. But the president who has no problem just making fun of reporters with disabilities, who goes off on
but
every
that's
individual.
That's the problem. It played right
He's the one who's got the thinnest skin.
Hey, it was just locker room talk.
And by the way, not only does he not have the thinnest skin, but it's the media. It's members of the media who are just so, they're so taken aback by the tenor. Oh, my goodness.
By the way, why wasn't Maggie Haberman there? Does anybody know the answer to that?
The Times doesn't go anymore. That's what
No, there was somebody from the Times who got an award in her place.
Oh. They wished to her and her family. There must have been some situation.
That's what I
because
thought.
They
yeah.
did. I was surprised that the Times person accepted it.
Yeah, because I had read they haven't gone since
they typically
2008.
Don't go, but somebody else accepted it on her behalf. But then they said, we wish well to you and your family,
right.
something.
Right.
So there must have
thinking.
Been some family
right.
situation.
And I have to say, I agree with the Times not to go. I think they're right.
As a correction, I had mistakenly said that Michelle Wolf was black. She does not identify as black. Racially ambiguous correspondent is what she does.
She
got into these issues. Racial. Yeah, well, she had gotten into these issues through the Rachel Dolezal thing, and she had spoken about it and said as a white woman. So I just wanted to clear that up.
Okay. Well, you led us down a bad road, a wrong road, because I followed along with you.
Well, no, that's true.
And I apologize, too.
No, well, there you go. I was just looking at that. Okay, we have 2 minutes. Anybody last words on anything else? What else do we have? What did you have?
First of all, I think the underreported story going right now, teachers striking all over the country. They're
right.
Striking now in Arizona. I thought one of her jokes Saturday night that was interesting was, yeah, go ahead and give me guns so I can sell it, so I can buy school supplies, you know.
That is pretty.
I think that we have to really understand what's going on with teachers around the country striking and finally standing up for themselves and for their students in the classroom.
Agreed.
And how that gets worked out economically, I don't know, but I think it's a big underreported story.
Well, in closing, I think the other underreported matter that occurred this week is while we're sitting here talking about the feelings of all the American journalists that were
hurt.
There were actually journalists that were killed as a result of a terrorist attack this week, and that's the thing that we should be focusing on, is the danger that journalists who are out there trying to speak truth to power are experiencing all over the world.
And that's why you don't normalize comedically what's going on at a Washington dinner, because it just normalizes the president. It's okay.
10 or more journalists dead in Afghanistan.
Yes.
10 or more so far.
All right. We're out of time. Thank you very much to everybody. My thanks. And we will be back right after this.